Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and joining me, as usual these days, is Mike Innes. Mike, how are you?
Hi John, all good here, and very much excited to get cracking with another preview pod.
Yes, fantastic. Mike, we've done most of the hard yards now. This episode is going to be part three of our big J2 2021 season preview, just in time with the big kickoff coming up next weekend as we're recording. Before we get down to business, Mike, and talk about some more J2 sides and newly promoted teams from J3, just some quick notices. If anybody downloaded part two of the season preview pod early last week, apparently the audio was very quiet. There were some issues. I'm quite new to the editing of podcasts. So I think it was probably my fault. Hopefully it's all fixed now. So if you did download the pod early, the audio was very quiet. You couldn't hear my opinions on the mid-table J2 teams. Please try downloading it again. If you just delete the pod and download it again, you should get the new version with the boosted audio, and it should sound okay. But please let me know if that's not the case. And please let me know if the audio sounds dodgy again this week, and I will get the IT department, which is also me, to look into it. Other things we should mention quickly, Mike, try and get all my mistakes out of the way early. We did talk about Ryoya Yamashita, the young Tokyo Verdy striker, in part two. I said he was 19, but he's actually 23. That's still pretty young for me, so it's not a huge mistake. But I deducted 4 years from his real age. So Ryoya Yamashita is actually 23, not 19. And some news, injury news coming out of one of the teams we talked about in part two, Mike. Jeff Chiba, their first choice goalkeeper, Shota Arai, picked up an injury in a training match last week. I think he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks, apparently, according to the official website. So we'll wait to see who takes over the gloves for the first few games of the season. Thankfully, it won't be Yuya Sato, because he's been moved on to Kumamoto, as we also mentioned last time. But Jeff with a bit of a goalkeeping conundrum to start the new season. Okay, I think that's all the mistakes and news from part two covered, Mike. So let's get down to business with part three. In this episode, we're going to talk about the teams that finished from 17th down to 22nd in the J2 standings last season. We're also going to talk about the two newly promoted teams coming up from J3, Akita and Sagamihara, in due course. But we're going to start by talking about Fagiano Okayama, Mike, the team that finished 17th in J2 last year. They've kept the same coach, haven't they, for the new campaign, Kenji Arima. And we had quite a few questions about Okayama on Twitter before the show. So to fire those at you in quick fire fashion, Gabriele Agnello asked, do we have to worry about Okayama? They haven't properly replaced their losses. They were poor, dreadful last season. Nagasaki Blue and Orange asking, will Okayama bounce back, or will they be relegation contenders in 2021? Richie Palmer at Gifu Richie, a bit more succinct, what the hell is going on at Okayama? They look rudderless and they're sinking rapidly. So Mike, Fagiano Okayama, what are we thinking?
When we were doing the 2020 review pods about Okayama, John, I think we were in agreement that they were actually quite a difficult club to talk about. It felt as if there's not really much of a hook to hang them on. Nothing really about them to attract the attention of the neutral. So let's try and get to grips with that idea going into the new season. For reasons I am unable satisfactorily to explain to you, John, I watched a small section of the club's 2021 season launch event on YouTube. The part that I saw comprised an anxious-looking man in a suit using a pointer stick to talk about a graph printed on a piece of card in the manner of a Japanese newscaster. You must be familiar with the sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I sense poo emojis couldn't have been far behind.
I wasn't sensitive to that, but it is very possible. My language skills are nowhere near good enough to understand what he was saying, but I do speak the international language of graph resembling a particularly perilous ski slope. And what I took from it was that Okayama really don't have a lot of cash, and that the anxious-looking man was seeking to manage fan base expectation. In terms of the squad for 2021, it's not been a fire sale. They have retained, for example, the ex-Ryukyu 2019 partnership down the left-hand side. That's Shuhei Tokumoto in the sort of left-back position, and Satoki Uejo further forward, who was probably Faggiano's player of the year last year. But they have let some veterans go. We talked about Kota Ueda, didn't we, in the last one, in the last pod, and also Shingo Akamine. Ueda has gone to Tochigi, Akamine to Ryukyu. They've also let the centre-back Keita Goto go to Sagamihara. But where the budget cuts bite hard, I think, is in the newcomers. In total, Okayama have signed three players on loan from J1 clubs, two university students, and two players on full contracts from other J League clubs. Those clubs are Mito and Tottori. Not saying they're bad clubs or bad players, but this, I think, gives an indication of the economic circumstances described on that graph, and the circumstances in which Kenji Arima is working, John. I think there are tough times ahead for Okayama. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you, that's very good points about the financial circumstances. We should mention probably as well William Popp, the goalkeeper who was first choice last year. His loan from Kawasaki's finished, hasn't it? So that they'll have a new number one in goal as well this year. I'm quite surprised they stuck with Kenji Arima as coach. I imagine that's also financial, judging by what we've discussed so far. But only two wins from the last 12 matches, you know, in 2020, and some pretty drab football to go with it. It's very hard for me to predict a team with Satoki Uejo, you mentioned, really, really good player. Paulinho to anchor the midfield around. Lee Yong-jae, of course, we know is a goal threat up front, providing he can stay fit. It's very hard for me to think about a team with those three in it being in relegation danger, but it doesn't look like being a very successful campaign at the moment, does it? Do you think they could be in relegation trouble, or do you think they'll be okay?
I'm looking for reasons, for some evidence that they might be able to improve, and I don't think it's there. I agree that it's a little bit surprising on the face of it that Arima is going to be staying on. I think it's worth just coming back to the point about the goalkeeper, John. As you said, William Popp has he's gone back to Kawasaki at the end of his loan. I believe he's since gone to Oita. But of the incoming players that I just briefly referred to, I think one of them is pretty interesting, and that's Togo Umeda. He's come from Shimizu, and he actually made 17 starts for S-Pulse last season in his rookie year, and he's only 20 now. That seems to me to be very unusual, you know, for a teenage goalkeeper to be playing in J1. But he's been loaned out to Okayama, presumably as the planned replacement for William Popp. And then there's a centre back, Rikito Inoue. He's come from Tottori, 23, but already has more than 100 starts to his name. Clearly, this is a big move for him, and I wonder if he may end up regretting his decision. 2020 was a grind, wasn't it? It was a grind. And so in the last pod, John, I made some reference to, you know, established J2 clubs who look in real danger. Okayama are one of those for me.
Yeah, I have to be honest. For me, Okayama replaced Tochigi as the team I least enjoyed watching in 2020, because they were just very, very stolid, weren't they, and unspectacular. We'll have to wait and see. I think the answer to the questions from the guys on Twitter is, do we have to worry about Okayama? Yes, based on the conversation that we had already. I agree with Richie. They look a bit rudderless, and they're heading in the wrong direction. The direction of travel is against them, isn't it? And I think they'll be relegation contenders, but possibly with the players that we've mentioned, the key men, if Lee Yong-jae gets goals, if Satoki Uejo gets goals, and Paulinho's fit, they might be okay, but I think if they finish 17th again with the squad that they've assembled, they'd probably consider that a reasonable season, you know, considering the transfers they've had. So yeah, it's a strange one, but yeah, I'm not expecting too many fireworks at the City Light Stadium this year. Let's move on, Mike, and talk about Zweigen Kanazawa. Now, they finished 18th, just behind Okayama last year. They've also retained their manager for 2021, Masaaki Yanagishita. And they've had a couple of interesting players come in and out of the door as well. So how about Kanazawa? What are we thinking?
Well, I mean, although they finished right next to them in the table, didn't they? Kanazawa were, in contrast with Okayama, one of the most exciting and eye-catching teams in the division last year. I found that to be the case. You never really knew whether they were going to administer or be on the receiving end of a bit of a beating. And for the neutral, that unpredictability combined with some very attractive attacking play made them quite a favourite. In a nutshell, they need to improve the defence and maintain their attack, which I think they might find a challenge. Unfortunately, three of the players responsible for that attacking excitement have left the club during the winter. We've already talked about two of them in previews, Toa Yamane and Lukao. So let's concentrate briefly on the third. He was lucky enough, really, or Kanazawa fans were lucky enough to see one of the J2 rookies of the season, I think, Mutsuki Kato, 13 goals in his debut season. He developed himself a very impressive highlights reel, didn't he? Quick, moves well, intelligent, always on the shoulder of the defender, must be really tricky to play against, scores with his left foot, right foot header, powerful shots, deft touches. He's got a lot in his locker. Not surprising he's been picked up by a J1 club, although unfortunately for him, it's Cereso, who we talked about their transfer policy this winter already. Haven't we, John? To replace those players, Kanazawa, they've given it a shot. They've got the more experienced Yuji Senuma, who's been a fringe player at Yokohama FC for the last three seasons. He's got some decent J2 goal scoring experience. And Shion Niwa, who's had a tough time at Ehime, but I think he's quite a clever player. Facing the significant task of improving the team's defence, Yanagishita has brought back to Kanazawa a couple of players, goalkeeper Masaaki Goto, and centre-back Honoya Shoji, who I've described here as big and basic. And they really need to excel because they're not going to score as many goals Kanazawa this season, I don't think. No.
I'll have to make sure that big and basic is on the list of voting for pod slogan for next year. I really like it.
Yes, noting that our Twitter friend Kanazawa Dreamin was happy to agree that barrel-chested was the term for Yamane, of course. But so he may well have a view on Yashorji.
Yeah, I think I've got the key word in my notes about Kanazawa, and I don't know if you'd go along with this, Mike, is dynamism. And I think they're just going to be less dynamic all over the park, really, especially up front from last year. I mean, it would be almost impossible to effectively replace Lukao, Mutsuki Kato and Toa Yamane, wouldn't it? And I think you're right to say they've given it a go. Yuji Senuma, slow, strong, very powerful shot, but not particularly mobile, I wouldn't say. I agree with you about Shion Niwa. I really like him. I think he's an excellent player, and Ehime would have been in a lot more trouble than they ultimately were last year if it wasn't for him leading the line at times. He, like you said, he's very intelligent, clever player. Reminds me a little bit of Tatsuhiko Kubo, but that's in terms of movement really more than anything else. But yeah, I think I'm not too impressed with the recruitment in defence, to be honest. And I note that they only won two of the last 16 games in 2020, I thought that might be enough to lead to a coaching change in the winter transfer window. Obviously, that's not happened, but I think they'll be okay in lower mid table. But that lack of dynamism up front is going to hurt them, I think. I think they might be very similar position to last year, to be honest, lower mid table. What do you think? Are there any relegation fears, or will Kanazawa be okay?
Jumping ahead to the end of the pod, John, I've got Kanazawa in a pretty similar position to where they finished this year. But I think that, you know, perhaps that's more to do with other clubs' pluses and minuses than it is to do with their own. Because they don't look particularly strong at the back, and clearly they've lost out up front.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I think if we can say that Okayama and Kanazawa don't look any stronger than they did last season, what about the team that finished in 19th place, Mike? Machida, Zelvia. They've also retained the experienced campaigner Ranko Popovic as manager. Their list of ins and outs is very eye-catching. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you think about their chances for this season. We had another question from Nagasaki Blue and Orange on Machida. Are they a top two contender? Which is a very bold bold question. So I'll let you answer it. Mike, what about Machida?
That's very kind. Machida, I think, you know, they're one of a pretty small number of J2 clubs who have, I think, unarguably a stronger squad in 2021 than was the case last year. Most obviously up front, they've traded decent young striker in Mizuki Ando for the potentially barnstorming combination of Chong Tese and Dudu. Veterans that will stretch any J2 defence, about whom, you know, we were asking questions about why they weren't retained by Niigata and Corfu respectively. Accompanying Dudu from Corfu is Shusuke Ota, not up to the standard of Dudu and Tese, but a handy option to go alongside the veteran Yuki Nakashima. Not too many changes in midfield. I remember, John, you and Stu were very keen on Taiki Hirato. And I agree. Every time I saw Machida do anything good last season, on closer inspection, it always seemed to be Hirato and his wavy hair at the heart of it. And there are three other youngish midfield players who've been getting a good amount of playing time and who've all been kept on. Leo Takae, Kai Shisano in the middle, Kaina Yoshio on the right. His loan from Marinos has been extended. And with better players up front to work with, I think it'll be really interesting to see how those guys can develop. There were a bunch of questions about the defence, though. Popovic has kept on two veteran centre-backs, Hiroki Mizumoto, who's on loan from Hiroshima, and Kota Fukatsu. He's also signed Reya Morishita on loan from Cerezo, no frills, but solid. And then we've got the bad boy of J2 defending, Shohei Takahashi. He was on loan at Verdi last season, wasn't he? But he's come from Iwata. And I worry there are some downgrades in defence. Yota Akimoto has gone as the goalkeeper. He's gone to Ehime. And Shu Mogi has come from Cerezo on the 23. And also on the right back, Itsuki Oda, he looked a good player. He's gone back to Kashima. And has gone on to Chiba, and Kai Miki comes in from Yamagata. Not really too sure about that. I think there are, let's say, pluses and minuses, but Popovic, I think, has clearly concentrated on improving one area of the team.
I think Machida's transfer business has been really interesting. You're very right to highlight the midfield. I think that was their most impressive area last season, wasn't it? With Hirato and the youngsters Yoshio, Sano, Takae all being retained for this season. I think that's quite a big win. You know, obviously, they're not exactly transfers, but not losing any of those players I think is probably pretty good business as well. It's a clear upgrade in attack, bringing in Chong Tese, who was unbelievably good when he was on loan at Niigata the second half of last season. Dudu, we know what he's capable of as well. I agree. I think I'm still concerned about the centre-back and even the full-back positions, to be honest. Obviously, Kota Fukatsu is preferred, I think, as you know, he has been captain in the past at centre-back. He's a good defender, but his engage is catching up with him a little bit now. He can't be expected to play 42 games, I don't think. Shohei Takahashi, we've talked about. The quality of his decision-making is variable. He's usually responsible for one or two gaffes per season, so I don't think he's the answer. Kai Miki sort of made his name at Machida a few seasons back before going to Yamagata, so I think he's back at where he was a fan favourite and you know, very well regarded. So we'll see if that triggers him into some good form. We didn't talk about Aria Jasura Hasegawa coming in midfield, Mike, but considering the young guns that they've got, he might not get that much game time. Fingers crossed. I think to answer Nagasaki Blue and Orange questions, I think if you look at the midfield and the forwards, there's definitely the basis of a promotion challenging team there for me. But I think the squad as a whole, if you you add in the defence and the goalkeeper situation, where Yota Akimoto is obviously his loan from Shonan's finished, as you mentioned, I think it's a bit of a stretch to say that they can go from 19 to top two in the space of one season. But the foundations are definitely being laid there for a very interesting team, and I think we're starting to see some of the cyber agent money being spent on the team now that the sort of stadium renovation seems to be in hand or almost finished. I think the new stand at the stadium's finished now or almost finished. I think this time next year we might be having another very interesting conversation about Machida, but I think this year's probably too early. I'm expecting a big improvement, maybe top 10, but not top two. What do you think?
So my kind of the concluding sentence in my notes is too many question marks about the defence for Machida to push for promotion from a 19th place finish last year, but it's going to be fun watching them try.
I think that's good. Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see what they can do. I mean, Chong Tese and Dudu, like you said, I mean, not many games are going to be nil-nil, are they, involving Machida, I don't think, this year. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Okay, Mike, let's talk about Gunma. You mentioned off-air, I think, when we finished recording part two, that you had a few points you wanted to make about Gunma, so I'm looking forward to hearing those. Gunma finished 20th last season. They've retained their coach, Ryosuke Okuno, for 2021. Quite a few players have come in and out, some interesting ones in my opinion, and they've kept hold of the talisman, really, who I think is the key man. I think most people would agree it's Genki Omai up front. 20th, not the most eye-catching sort of season for Gunma last year, but I think this time they've probably got enough to be safe again, maybe even lower mid-table. But Avis Badaniel asks us, Gunma had a strong finish to 2020. Can this continue in 2021? What are we thinking about Gunma, Mike?
Put a bit of meat on the bones of Avispa Daniel's point there, actually. I'll refer back to the chart of legend that I was talking about with Kita Kyushu. That enabled me to look at a team's record in the second half of last season as a discrete entity. I'm looking at it, but I can remember that Gunma were the ninth best team in the division in the second half of last season. That's quite something, I think, for a team of the size of Gunma. And I think that, you know, overall, an unexpected claim. I really enjoyed watching Gunma last season, and I think they will do better in 2021. So 12 months ago, they were promoted back into the higher division, and in preparation for that, they signed a lot of players. They got off to a pretty terrible start, took a long time to gel, but as I've just described, they did improve, And 49 points in a 42 game season is actually their joint best ever result. And for the season ahead, the coach, Ryosuke Okuno, he hasn't made sort of sweeping changes, but he has retained a sensible blend of younger and more experienced players. They've got the goalkeeper Keiki Shimizu, on the left-hand side of midfield Junya Kato, right midfield Tatsuya Tanaka, who really connects up well with Genki Ormae. I remember John, you making a point in one of the pods last year, I think it was, about how you advised your son when you go and watch a game with your son to follow an individual player, to watch an individual player during a game. You can't get much better fun in J2 watching than following Genki Ormae playing for Gunma. It feels as if he's found an environment, A, in which he can be the star man, because everything really revolves around him, but B, where he can also be very effective. I've tweeted this a couple of times before, but one of my absolute favorite games from last year was Verdy 1, Gunma 3. Ormai got a hat trick of assists, and he's a class act. Three beautiful touches without breaking sweat, and which Verdy could do nothing about. It's a beautiful thing. He's great, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do, with a bit more experience under their belts of working in that way. Headline departure, Daihachi Okamura. He even got a mention on Big Pod. He's gone to Sapporo. And what with him and the veteran Tetsuya Funatsu, he's gone to Gifu. Gunma do have some rebuilding to do in the middle of defence. Hiroto Hatao has come from Omiya. He ought to be able to do a bit of a job for them. Yuta Fuji has J2 experience and will want to get back playing again after a quiet season at Fukuoka. Elsewhere, it's about increasing the options to play alongside Ormai and the aforementioned Tatsuya Tanaka. Okuno has brought in several young players from the fringes of other J2 clubs. I don't think Gunma are going to charge up the table, but to me, it looks like a sensible strategy. Sensibly executed. What can a club like Gunma do if they want to build gradually in difficult economic circumstances?
I think that's a really fair and balanced assessment, and I have to agree. It's my own prejudice from years of watching J2, really, but yeah, Gunma games are never the ones that I would turn to eagerly. But yeah, last season, but by the end of the season, certainly they were playing some really exciting football. Very similar to Tochigi in terms of how they kind of transformed from being a team that I would, go out of my way to avoid. Into one that I really, really enjoyed watching. Can I get a word on Shoei Yoshinaga, Mike, who's coming on loan from Omiya? I think he's a defender, isn't he? Do you know much about him?
I think I spoke briefly about Shoei Yoshinaga in the Omiya pod, John. He's come through the ranks at Omiya, I think I identified him as one of the players that fans might be a bit sad to see go. Because I think there's a sense that he's not really had a fair crack of the whip at Ormia. I don't think he's ever really found his position in the team either. So I think I've seen him described as, like a sort of a right back and a forward kind of thing. All over the place. I think we're in the realms of unfulfilled potential, and it'll be good to see what he can do. As I also mentioned, the sort of the path from Almia to Gunma is a well-trod one. Obviously, Almia has done that, and also as I mentioned, Hiroto Hatol. So it'll just be interesting to see the guy get some playing time. He's only 20, but he's had a couple of seasons really battling to get himself heard at Almia. So hopefully it'll be a season of opportunity for him.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see Gunma play and if they can build on what they achieved in the second half of last season. Yes, I'll keep my eyes peeled for Shoei Yoshinaga as well. Sounds like he could be one to keep an eye on at the back. So, Mike, it's time we got real, I think, and talked about the sides that finished in what would have been the relegation places in an ordinary non-COVID afflicted season. So, Ehime and Yamaguchi, 21st and 22nd in the table, respectively, last year. Let's talk about Ehime first, because we had questions on them from our Twitter followers. Kanazawa Dreamin asks, this is going to be quite downbeat, Mike. Is there any hope for Ehime? They seem to struggle every season. Gifu Richie Palmer had a similar top question in a similar vein. So Ehime finished 21st last year, as you mentioned. Losing the last six games in a row, no goals scored and 13 conceded. That was enough to see a managerial change with Kenta Kawai going out of the door. And the new man in, who I know nothing about, Shigenari Izumi, he's the coach for this season. Not too many players coming in or out. With four relegation places, Mike, relegation looks very likely. For Ehime, I don't think there's any point sugarcoating it, even before a ball's being kicked, I suppose. What do you make of Ehime?
Well, I'm not sure whether to take a run up at this or to go for the stiff drink option. So Ehime must know that this is the most important season for their club since they began competing in the J League in 2006. Their highest ever finish, I'd forgotten about this, but it was fifth in 2015. But each year since then, they have ended up lower than the season before, culminating in last season's 21st. As you say, four relegation places to avoid, John Ehime need an about turn. Change in fortunes, a recalibration, otherwise they will be playing in J3 next year. So Ehime have given the task of leading the club through this crucial time to indeed Shigenari Izumi, whose last experience as the man in charge was at Ehime Youth in 2009. So his career has been as a backroom guy at Ehime, interspersed with periods working in regional offices for the JFA, sort of like Shikoku level coaching.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, indeed. And his approach to squad building is reminiscent of that of Jake and Elwood in the Blues Brothers, needing to raise funds in order to save from closure the Catholic orphanage where they grew up. They look up all their old musician buddies from way back when and get the band back together. Izumi, who in some respects could also be described as being on a mission from God, has been making similar sorts of phone calls to ex-Ehime players in an effort to guilt trip them back for one last series of shows to save the place where, in footballing terms at least, they grew up. And it's kind of worked. They've got in goalkeeper Akimoto, who we've talked about before. They've got in left back Kenta Uchida, who we've mentioned before as well. He's come from Corfu. They've got in Nobuhisa Urata. He's come from Matsumoto. And unfortunately, they've also got in Takashi Kondo, who's come back from Ormia. There's a lot of pressure on these guys, especially Akimoto. I mean, remembering that we were laughing on the review pods, or I was laughing on the review pods about goalkeeping errors by Masahiro Okamoto and his stand-in Taichi Kato. I've got to say, there's a lot of pressure on Takumu Kawamura as well. He's a really dynamic central midfield player who seems to be, to a very great extent, he's holding things together. That poor kid's on his third season on loan from Hiroshima, whereas in contrast, is it Yoichi Naganuma, who was on loan from Hiroshima, he's gone back. Izumi hasn't signed any forwards at all, not even high school kids. And two of last season's three top scorers, Shion Niwa, we've just been talking about him, and also Kouki Arata, have left for other J2 clubs. So there's pressure to get goals on players who were squad players in 2020, guys like Yoshiki Fujimoto, Go Nishida, Makoto Yoshida, who between them last season scored two goals.
It doesn't look good, does it?
No, I mean, and they seem to be, they seem, Ehime seems like a. It seems like a charming club in some respects, but as we've talked about a little bit with Senki, just up the coast, all of this feels like how can we get through a season and hope circumstances are more favourable in a year's time, rather than how can we improve the team and build for the future. You've talked about clubs having clear plans for development that go beyond the marketing bump on the website. Stuff that has weight and meaning. But these are the players who are tasked with digging the club out of a hole into which it's allowed itself to slide over several years. And that means, in really, really basic terms, it means winning five or six games more than they did last year. I mean, if they do it, if Izumi does it, amazing job. But it would take a braver punter than I to bet on Ehime avoiding relegation.
Yeah, my gut feeling, just to piggyback on that, is that they just really couldn't afford to lose Shion Niwa, because his not just his goals, but his contribution to the forward line was absolutely huge in 2020. The squad that they've got now, for me, just doesn't have enough goals in it to finish any higher than fourth bottom. I think the only hope really is players coming in on loan or in the summer transfer window to help them out. But yeah, with the squad that they've got at the moment, I'm not feeling too confident. Sorry if any Ehime fans are listening. We're trying to be as positive as we can, but it's not looking great. Okay, let's try and inject some positivity, Mike, and talk about Yamaguchi. Obviously, another team that's very fun to watch in terms of the playing style, or they were last season anyway. Unfortunately, it wasn't entirely successful. They ended up finishing bottom in 22nd place. As a result, they have a new coach with a pretty decent record at Sendai and J1, don't they? Susumu Watanabe, quite a few players in and out of the door as well. So I don't know. I'm not really sure what to make of Yamaguchi this season. But what do you think?
Well, after prompting such fierce debate in the review pod on account of their bottom place finish last season, it feels like Yamaguchi have taken pretty firm action to ensure they suffer no such indignity this time around. Susumu Watanabe. May be best known to pod listeners as having been the Sendai coach from 2014 to 2019. He's inherited some pretty serious problems, but it looks like he's taking serious steps to deal with them. We've made similar points about other teams, but what he looks to be doing at Yamaguchi is bringing in strong, experienced players in goal, central defence, and central midfield. And giving himself options up front. To an extent, he's taking a bit of a similar approach to Izumi at Ehime. Two of his key signings played for him at Sendai, namely Kentaro Seki, who's the goalkeeper and who joins from Vegalta. And there's also centre back Hirofumi Watanabe, who moves from Kobe. They've also got central midfielder who we were talking about on Twitter, weren't we? John Kensuke Sato started more than 200 games for Yokohama FC. One of these things these players have in common is that they're all moving to Yamaguchi from J1 teams. Both Watanabe and Sato were active players at Kobe and Yokohama FC last season. In attack, no one individual quite as eye-catching as those three, although Watanabe can be forgiven for looking first and foremost to conceding, let's say 25 fewer goals in a season than they did last time. But two experienced players are coming in, Yatsunori Shimaya and Kazuhito Kishida. They were actually Yamaguchi's stellar attacking duo in 2015-16. They played together at Yamaguchi for those two seasons and they scored 62 goals between them. Shimaya comes from Tokushima. Kishida, who I've described here as Kani, returns from a loan spell at Iwate. Might sound like I'm saying the same kind of thing about Yamaguchi as I did about Ehime, but that when Yamaguchi do it, it's good, and when Ehime do it, it's bad. But at least Watanabe has a perspective of having been involved at more than one club. Looks like he's got a clear plan. He's not focused quite so much on bringing back players that he knew 10 years ago, and the players he's bringing in are better than the ones that Izumi is getting.
Yeah, I think just based on your kind of analysis of the transfer policy and my own ideas, it is a little bit similar to what Jeff Chiba have been doing in terms of just trying to add some kind of a steel and resilience to the side, isn't it? I think we should mention as well, maybe one of the reasons that there's been fewer kind of transfer moves in attack is because somehow they managed to keep hold of a Kazuma Takai, who I think scored 11 goals last year, and most of them were mightily impressive. I'm not really sure how Yamaguchi have been able to keep hold of him. I was fully expecting him to move, higher up the table, or possibly for even a J1 team to maybe take a chance on him, at least as a loan or a cut price deal. So we'll have to wait and see. But my gut feeling is, Mike, Yamaguchi might just have enough. Nous, for want of a better word, in experience to avoid finishing in the bottom four this year. I don't know if you go along with that.
Yes, I do go along with that. I mean, they are losing some good players. You're right to say that it's a big success for them to have retained Takai, but they're losing as I talked about in the last pod. They're losing Takahiro Ko. They're losing Yuri, who looked like a good J2 striker. A little bit similar to Lucao, perhaps, and they're losing Paolo Junichi Tanaka. So, but the overall approach is solidity, isn't it? I think that's what Watanabe is aspiring to achieve. Which, considering that they finished bottom of the table and conceded 74 goals, that's a reasonable aim. And my sense is that, given the basic caliber of the players that he's bringing in there, I expect him to be able to accomplish that aim.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you've persuaded me. I'm reassessing my bottom four predictions as we speak on the fly. Okay, Mike. So I think we've now analysed or kind of talked about all of the teams from last season's J2 table. We should move on and talk about the two teams coming up from J3 to join the chaos this season with these four relegation places. Now, you had some comparisons that you wanted to make between these two teams, didn't you? So it's Blaublitz Akita, of course, who were the runaway champions of J3 last year, coming up with their coach Ken Yoshida. As far as I can make out, they've only really lost one of the key players from the promotion-winning, title-winning team. It's a big one, though, in every sense, isn't it? Han Hogang, the central defender who would sometimes randomly take penalties, he's gone to Yokohama FC. And, of course, Sagamihara finishing second place, nowhere near as eye-catching as Akita, and almost seeming to get promoted by accident, although they did end up having a sort of almost unbelievable, I think it was 18 games by the end of the season, unbeaten run to get that second automatic promotion place. So, Mike, Akita and Sagamihara, what are we thinking?
Yeah, I hope that that you and the pod listeners will forgive me for suggesting this approach, that we kind of compare aspects of these two teams. I think they're very interesting. But apart from the fact that they're both making their debuts in the higher division, it seems as if everything about Akita and Sagamihara, how they've come to be in J2 and how they've prepared for the new season, is different. So seeing how they get on will be fascinating. And I suppose I'll start things off by saying I have no idea, really. I don't really know how the teams will fare in comparison with each other. I'll try to draw a conclusion about that later on. But let's take a look at how they've come to be in J2, because I think we may be able to take something from that and apply it to the new season. Of course, as listeners will perhaps remember, last year Akita sailed to the title. They were on top of J3 all season long. They learnt what it took to win J3 matches, and really their promotion was never in doubt. Will that experience in itself prepare them for J2? Well, I think that perhaps in terms of individual and collective confidence, yes. But the reality is that they will be facing a different level of opposition. And as a group, there's no knowledge, and even individually, there's very little knowledge of what it takes to win J2 matches. I mean, in contrast, again, looking back to 2020, Sagamihara, didn't they, John? They slowly emerged from the pack over the course of the season. At halfway stage, they were mid-table, 12 points behind Kumamoto in second. There was no mention of Sagamihara being serious contenders until a few matches before the end. But do you know what, John? I've got a chart. This chart is blissfully simple. I'm sure that everybody will be relieved about that. It gives basic data relating to the top eight teams in J3 2020, and it answers one simple question. In matches where these teams conceded the first goal, did they end up winning, losing, or drawing the match? And I'll repeat, I think this could be relevant for the new season. Akita, they're not really involved in this discussion because they hardly went behind all season. But as you will remember, the drama on the last day of the season came down to which one of Sagamihara and Nagano would win the second promotion spot. So let's compare those two teams in the chart. Nagano conceded the first goal in 11 matches. Of those 11 matches, they went on to win, coming from behind to win, one. They came from 1-0 down to draw, one. And they lost 9. So in all the games that Nagano conceded first, they won a total of 4 points. With Sagamihara, they conceded first 14 times, a few more than Nagano. Of those 14 games, they came from behind to win 2, but they drew 7 and lost only 5. So in all the games Sagamihara conceded first, they won a total of 13 points. And it turns out that Sagamihara had a kind of, it's like a slogan, which translates as, even if we concede first, we don't lose. So the club deliberately cultivated that mental strength, resilience, doggedness to get something out of games when they went 1-0 down. Kind of an obvious point, but it's better to draw than to lose. A little bit of progress is still progress. And that sounds like an attribute which, to me, which could be useful for a team moving into a higher division. And it's an attribute that Akita haven't needed to develop. So overall, Akita's route out of J3 was very different from Sagamihara's. And I can imagine that what the clubs bring from that experience is also very, very different.
It's going to be really interesting to see how these two sides fare, isn't it, this season? We had a question which we've partially answered already, I think, Mike, on Akita from Martin Spivey, who was asking, how does their recruitment compare to the rest of J2, because they have this blend of promising J3 players and one or two J2 level players coming in. And what are their chances of staying up, Akita? Any chance?
I think Martin's question is a really, really excellent one, and gets to the heart of to the other point of comparison that I wanted to draw between the two clubs. Akita have, as you said, John, they've retained almost all of their key promotion-winning players, with the exception of Han Ho Gang. They've also released Shoma Kamata, their former Shimizu left-back, but that's pretty much it. So the title-winning team is to a great extent intact. With a very small number of exceptions, Akita have brought players in from J3 clubs. With a very small number of exceptions, the new players don't have J2 experience. A handful of examples, more or less at random, and there are a fair few more. Makoto Fukuin was Numazu's star defensive midfield player. Hayate Take was a bit of a super sub at Toyama, but ended up as their top scorer. And even, as we were talking about in the green room, even Ryuji Saito, very good player who scored 7 in 17 starts at Sagamihara. Yes, Akita have signed somebody from Sagamihara, which I find very strange. The main exception to the J3 rule, Akita's most recent signing, Ryutaro Iyo, he comes from Sendai. He's 30 years old and right-back, sort of right wing-back. You did get J1 playing time last season and has experience from Nagasaki and Matsumoto. But it looks like Ken Yoshida's main approach has been keep the team together and strengthen the squad with the best players cherry-picked from other J3 teams. This is not what Sagamihara have done. Let's be clear about that. They've lost some really important players from the promotion-winning team. The goalkeeper, Victor's gone to Yamagata. Centre-back, Seito Tomizawa's gone to Verdi. Central midfield, Naoki Kanema's gone to Iwata. And just mentioned, forward Ryuji Saito to Akita. All of those are big losses. But their approach to building a squad for the new challenge is completely different from Akita's in terms of where they're getting their players from. For example, having lost Victor, the goalkeeper, Sagamihara have signed 3 goalkeepers, 1 from Yokohama FC, 1 from Fukuoka University, and 1 from Brazil.
Perhaps they're planning to play them all at once.
It may yet come in handy. There are 5 new centre-backs on the squad, most interesting potentially being Eduardo Kunde, he's 23 and he's from Brazil, and Jiro Kamata, 35, very experienced on loan from Kashiwa. Not to be left out, Akita style, there are a couple of J3 forwards, Tsubasa Ando from Hachinohe, Shu Hiramatsu from Toyama. It's absolutely all over the place. John, what do you think? What are we to make of all of this craziness?
Yeah, I think it goes back to something which kind of has been at the back of my mind since just before we started recording, which is I do think Sagamihara have a more and it doesn't look like it from the transfer business, but bear with me. I think they have a more holistic, long-term approach to being in J2. And I think just looking at the transfers that they've done, I don't think that it's the be-all and end-all for them if they don't survive in J2 this year. Because I think the idea is that the club is moving into a position where it's on a very sound financial footing from Omeka. I think the new stadium that they want to build is not confirmed yet or anything, but I think that's coming. I think they are taking a more long-term approach to just building the club out, you know, in every sense. And I think that might explain why their transfer business looks a bit haphazard at the moment. I mean, we mentioned how important this season is for Ehime, for example. It's almost existential for them at this point to stay in J2. I don't think that's the case for Sagamihara at all. I think the Brazilian signings would ordinarily worry me, especially Brazilian goalkeepers do not tend to do that well when they come into the J-League. But Sagamihara's track record with Brazilian players has been pretty good, hasn't it? I mean, they wouldn't have been promoted if it wasn't for Romulo and Yuri up front last year, I think it's fair to say. So we'll perhaps give a pass to Aguinaldo, the goalkeeper who's come in, and Eduardo Kunde, we've mentioned, who I think is nominally a left back, but we don't really know. My fear for Sagamihara is just not enough goals in the team, probably. Maybe an over reliance on Romulo and Yuri, which they could get away with last year, and they won't in J2, I don't think. Losing Ryuji Saito is a big miss as well. I really liked Tsubasa Ando. You mentioned the forward that they've picked up from Hachinohe, and to be honest, this is dipping into the J3 pod, but with Hachinohe losing him and Masashi Kokubun, who's gone to Akita, I think it's probably going to be a long season for Hachinohe in J3, but I digress. I don't know about Sagamihara. I don't think too many of the players that they brought in are going to have a massive impact on their survival chances, in all honesty. So I think a lot will depend on, like you said, they will try and keep games very tight, very compact. If they go a goal down, they don't change much. They try and nick an equaliser and then hold on to that. How effective that will be, I suppose we'll have to wait and see. I'm a bit more bullish about Akita, but I think that might just be overspill from them being promoted, you know, so early last year and having so much time to prepare. But again, I think lack of J2 experience is potentially going to be problematic. Although I do really like Fukuyan, I like Kokobun, we've mentioned. I like pretty much all the players that they brought in. But again, I think goals are going to be... This is a fairly self-explanatory. Goals are going to be harder to come by in J2, aren't they, for both of these sides? And I think they both might struggle to get enough. I don't know. Who do you think has got the better chance of survival, Mike? Is it simplistic to say Akita? Because that's where my money would be at the moment.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there are pluses and minuses for both teams. I think your point about you know, Sagamihara's attitude towards this as being, you know, effectively a step along the road, but perhaps not, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all for them to maintain newfound J2 status. I think that's a really interesting point. In terms of how this is going to work out, I think there can be ups and downs in a long season, but I don't think that at the end of the 42 games, either side is likely to, you know, be a surprise or, you know, to achieve, a top half finish or something like that. Of course, it's possible, but I don't see a clear reason for it in either case. Ultimately, I think that Sagamihara will struggle more than Akita actually to win games. So I expect Akita to be able to pick off a proportion of the smaller teams, especially at home. I mean, you know, absolutely bearing in mind their lack of experience. But Sagamihara will too often, they'll have to settle for a point. So for me, I think that Akita are more likely to stay up and Sagamihara are more likely to go back down.
Yeah, I think I'd have to go along with that. I mean, it's kind of a routine answer in a sense, but I think based on what we see in front of us, it's the logical The logical conclusion, isn't it? Okay, Mike, I think we're short of time now for part three of our big J2 season preview. It's the part of the pod that I used to hate when Ben was hosting, but now I'm hosting, so I think it's totally fine. We're going to do some fun, jovial predictions that in no way will be used to make us look like idiots 10 months from now. So no pressure, Mike. But four teams are going to go down. In your head right now, which are the four teams that we're going to see in that expanded relegation zone this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, predicting final positions of J2 is a fool's errand, John, which is, I think, where we come in.
Quite right.
So, I've got in my league table my forecast league table. I've got probably six or so teams who are roughly kind of similar towards the bottom end of the table. But in the bottom four, from the bottom up, I've got Ehime, Sagamihara, Okayama, and Verdi.
Yeah, I think I'm very similar. Basically, it's quite reductive, but I always look at the relegation zone, and I'm looking for every team that I look at. I'm like, are there four teams worse than you? You know, when I'm assessing these things, I think for Ehime, the squad looks so thin, doesn't it? There's not really anything to go on in terms of positives, unfortunately. So yes, I think Ehime are going to be in there. Sagamihara also, I just don't think they have enough. There's not enough spark, I don't think, in attack to get them the goals that they need to win the tight games, as you mentioned. Okayama are also going to have a hard season. I think for me, it's kind of a toss-up between Verdi, Ryukyu and Okayama, who I think one of those three is going to have a very uncomfortable 2021, to be honest. You went for Okayama and Verdi in your bottom four. So
I did. Just outside the bottom four, I've got Kitakyushu and Ryukyu.
Interesting. Kitakyushu getting sucked into the mix as well. Okay, I think Akita are going to be in the bottom four, but only just. So I'll put them, fourth bottom in my predictions. And then, it's a kind of a toss-up between Verdi and Okayama for me. You had both of them, so I'll go for Ryukyu. I'm sorry, Jeff. It's just in the interest of balance, you know. Okay. All right, Mike. Now that we've accurately predicted, we've chosen eight teams to fill the four relegation places. It's the grand finale of our J2 season preview. So we'll move on swiftly to end on a positive. What about the top two, Mike? I know that you've done a lot of number crunching about how many points you think each team's going to finish with this season. Number crunching not my strong point, as is well established, but. I tell you what, I'll go first this time to avoid having thunder stolen. My top two right now, before anybody's kicked a ball in anger, is a Kyoto and a Yamagata. But how about yourself?
So I've got four teams who are very, very close together, and then one team who is a little bit out in front. So the four teams that I've got who are very close together are Yamagata, Niigata, Matsumoto, and Nagasaki. And at the top, I've got Kyoto.
Okay. So it's kind of good. I feel confident now that we're on sort of similar lines, at least. Yeah. I also have a feeling Matsumoto could be. It kind of sounds strange to describe them as a dark horse, because I don't think anybody would raise an eyebrow if they were up there at the top, but compared to how they finished last year, I suppose they would technically qualify as a dark horse, wouldn't they, if they were right up there at the top, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, as I think I said in the first preview, I can imagine that clubs don't necessarily have to achieve a great number of points. The overall standard, I think, is going to be a little bit on the low side. That by no means precludes the idea of an exciting competition. But fundamentally, I don't think teams are necessarily going to have to be that great in order to be challenging. It's the weekend before the start of a new season, John. This is great, isn't it? It's one of the most exciting times of the year. We're ready to
Yeah, it's
start.
very, yeah, no, totally agree. It's very exciting, and yeah, it's good to have some positive vibes around the place, in general. And since you graciously went along with all the prediction questions I asked you, Mike, I won't ask you about Omiya. I'll just assume that they're somewhere safely in the middle of the pack, in no danger of any anything too exciting.
I mean, as I mentioned, it could go in any direction, including off at a tangent. But I've got them, as you mentioned it, I've got them in ninth.
Yeah, well, I think yeah, just nothing too eventful, I think, or not nothing something to stem the incessant tide of poo emojis at the season launch will be in order, wouldn't it? Okay, Mike. Yeah, for any listeners, if you think if you think predicting the league table or even individual rounds of games during the season is something you'd like to do, Richie Palmer, Gifu Richie, runs the hashtag JPred competition on Twitter every season. So if you want to get involved, just look for @Gifu Richie on Twitter, or search for the hashtag JPred, and you can get involved with picking teams from J1, J2, and J3. If you're sort of a bit more hardcore and you want to do it on the regular, if you look for @Okinawa Aussie Jeff Osborne on Twitter, or @Condrey Condrei Tobias, they can hook you up with an account on the Transfer Market website, where you can take part in a kind of prediction game every week, every round, and you can do J1, J2, J3. I think even the JFL is available if you're so inclined. So yeah, if you want to do some predicting of your own, please get involved with JPred, or with the Transfer Market prediction game. Okay, yeah, Mike. I think we did it. It was a kind of a marathon to get through all three parts of the J2 season preview this time. So thanks for sticking with me all the way through. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope the listeners did too. Do you have any final thoughts you want to add, Mike, before we retire and prepare for a new campaign?
Oh, well, I thought you were going to say before we retire and prepare for J3 previews, but that's another story, isn't it? No, not really. I think I should say thank you very much to yourself, John, for acting as host. As I mentioned on Twitter the other day, it's only when you participate in the recording of podcasts that I can see how really good at it you are. What a treat to see your professionalism in doing this work, John. It's an absolute pleasure and a treat. And also to say thank you very much to the folks on Twitter who have responded with questions, with encouragement, and with enthusiasm, which is what we all want on the dawn of a new season.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think thanks everybody for sending in questions. We want to make the show that everybody listening wants to listen to, and yeah, having questions from listeners and feedback really helps us to do that. So please keep that coming. If you think Mike's praise of me wasn't effusive enough, obviously that I will retweet that. Make sure that gets pinned on my wall. Yeah, no, seriously, Mike, I'm just kidding. That'll be clipped out and used. I'll use that audio in every podcast now. I think that was very, very kind of you to say so. Okay, Mike, yeah, I think your point about the J3 season previews was tongue-in-cheek, but I think well made. We had better end this episode so we can get down to some serious J3 previewing. But yeah, hopefully we'll be back soon talking about, you know, the first round of J2 action that's coming up, and any other goings on in J2 and J3 as well. But yeah, I think that's all for our season previews for J2. So thanks as always for listening and downloading. If you're a supporter on Patreon as well, thank you very much for that. We appreciate that, and we don't take that for granted. We don't take it lightly. So yeah, thanks very much. And yeah, enjoy the opening round coming up this weekend. And yeah, we'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.